Now can you hear me? Okay, wonderful. All righty, I had clicked part of the mic, but not all of the mic. So in any event, what I wanted to say is obviously, thank you very kindly for letting me join you. There's really nothing more fun than talking about A Course in Miracles as far as I'm concerned. I'm kind of a one-trick pony in that case. So I also want to offer congratulations to anybody who's involved with the course, because I'm convinced that the course finds us. We don't really, we might think, oh yes, I saw it at a bookstore, but yes, something led you to that bookstore, because A Course in Miracles is a very comprehensive, in many ways, a very sophisticated work, and it does not fall into the hands of anyone except those who have really, in some way, made a big commitment. And I mean a big commitment. You may not realize you made it, but absolutely you did if you had crossed paths with this really fabulous work. And of course, its purpose is a healing purpose. It's to erode all of our ideas that are completely false. It's like we've all heard a lot these days about fake news and false flag events and so on and so forth. So you might say our ego is a false flag, and it puts out a lot of fake news about us and our place in the world and what the world is like and everything else. Now, we are awash in misinformation about ourselves, the world, our relationship to it, and everything else. And I think I mentioned last time that when Bill and Helen were taking this down, Bill said, well, I don't know how I can possibly change my mind 180 degrees about everything, not just a few things, but everything. He said, I just think that's impossible. Well, it's not impossible, and he did it, which is why it's so important to know that he is not only the person who helped bring this wonderful work forward, but he was its first totally successful student. So he absolutely practiced, practiced, and practiced. And that's what we're asked to do, is practice and practice these lessons. Now, the course is, you know, 1,500 pages long or whatever, and it's not about learning something. It's so confusing to us when it's called a course, because we immediately go into, there's a lot of material here that I have to learn. And I'll tell you what, if an author has to take 1,500 words to just teach you something that you have to learn, he's not a very good author. But this is not about learning something. It's about practice. This is a spiritual practice. In the text, it says basically in its more beautiful language than this, that joy and understanding and peace are a package deal. So that if you're not experiencing joy and you're not experiencing peace, presume you understand nothing. That kind of puts us in a place where we can be receptive to what's going on. So it truly is amazing to think that in the course of however many years it takes us, we literally can change our minds about everything, starting with what we are in the first place. And it spends a lot of time telling us that the ego sense of separate self is a construct. It's something that we literally make. We didn't know that that's what we were doing, certainly in our early years, but that's what happens. It's just a collection of notions about ourselves. And then added to that is a collection of defenses over all of the pain that this misinformation about ourselves creates. You know, the woundedness, that believing that we're separate and small and unlovable and not okay and so on and so forth, leaves us in what we think is a very vulnerable position. So the thing that we have to take a look at while we're here today is, just because we are filled with misinformation about ourselves does not mean that we have stopped having infinite creativity and creative power that's working all the time, whether we know it or not. So one of the things that we have to get this 180 degree shift about is the idea of how it is that we are related to our world. Many of the first 50 lessons are about trying to say over and over and over again the forms that make up our physical world and our thoughts are a seamless whole. And sometimes it starts those lessons saying, think about this. And sometimes it will say things like, look at things. It tries to tie together the things we see and the thoughts that we are entertaining, because they absolutely go together. It says in many ways throughout the text, the world is your environment. And I don't think it necessarily uses the word mirror, although I use it a lot, because I can't think there's one single thing in the entire world that helps us see more dramatically than thinking about the world as a mirror. Because here's the related to the connection between ourselves and the world that we have to do this 180 degree switch about, is that every single one of us grew into our childhood and into our adulthood with the experience and the unexamined presumption that we really are a separate self, that somehow we come into a world that's an objective world that already exists, and that somehow my job is to figure out how to negotiate my way through this very large, probably uncaring world, and somehow stay safe and stay alive. Well, that keeps the stress response turned on almost all the time, because that is an untenable position. And the course makes it very, very clear it's not true. So then it takes us by the hand and say, okay, we're going to start to talk about all of the things that are going to help you change your mind about this. And I want to call to your attention, since some of you probably like the science that is available about this, that, and I might have mentioned this the last time, that this is in the biological field, that we have, 60 trillion cells or so in the body. And what I want you to do now is just look at your arm or your hand or whatever is handy for you to look at and realize there are a whole bunch of cells just in that little part of your body that you're able to look at, and every one of them are very intently listening to every single thought that you're having. Is that quite a thing to think about? So, in any event, and they not only are listening carefully to that stream of thoughts of things that we presume are true and pay no attention to, but we should, and they're answering. You know how they're answering? They're answering by your physical world, what you think of as your physical world of form. That's the response. Now, you can also look at it from a quantum physics point of view. There's some marvelous material out here about this. And somebody wrote that, and whether this is the exact number or not, we don't care, because the point is, and I have read this, I don't know, for many years, that in a sense, we blink off and on. In other words, we are in our manifest form as much as we are in our unmanifest state, so to speak. And that we might say oscillate or vibrate back and forth, something, you know, the number that you've heard before, 144,000 times per second, which means that every time we, you might say, blink off into our unmanifest state, the quantum field is saying, how do you want to show up when you blink back on? Once again, the things that we are paying attention to, the things that we're thinking, the things that are attractive to us in some way, are giving instructions. So it's whether you think of it as the quantum field or whether you're thinking of it as DNA, there is a highly responsive circumstance going on here. And we have presumed incorrectly that the things we think really pretty much don't matter. We might give lip service to them, to the fact that they matter, but for the most part, we think, well, they're private and they're my own business and nobody knows what they are. And besides, they're just thoughts. You know, it's actions that matter. Okay, here you go. A big idea that is 100% false. It's absolutely backwards. And always the driver of all of our experience is whatever is in our minds. So since this ego is made up of a lot of unfortunate ideas about ourselves and everyone else, that's what it tackles. It tries to help us see from early on that the things that we believe simply are not true. They're not evil and they're not criminal, but they aren't accurate. And of course, the least accurate of all is that we somehow have harmed ourselves, harmed reality, and that we are in fact guilty. And of course, what the Course is about is to help us see nothing could be further from the truth. Mistaken? Absolutely. But remember, guilt is for punishment, which is what we do to ourselves and each other. And that needs to be downgraded, so to speak, to a mistake. Because as it tells us, mistakes are for correcting, not punishing. So I tuned in to your lovely lady who was here before, where she was talking about the Christian language being distressing to people. And it is for a lot of people and for a lot of women, the fact that it uses the patriarchal masculine gender is also, I know people who have actually gone all the way through this book and scratched out all the he's and put she's in there to feel better about it. And Amy was also correct when she indicated that this was bringing up stuff for her. That's what the Course is for, is to bring up stuff. So you see, it's right at work even before you read, get into anything about what it's about. The fact that it may use patriarchal language or Christian language or both for some, it's already doing its work. Because let me tell you what it's doing and how that's such a valuable thing to have happen. And rather than run from it to go, okay, I need to learn from this. The language itself is basically neutral. But what it's doing, it's getting behind the defenses and it's, you might say, poking at a wound. You can call it a psychic wound. You can call it any kind of a wound that you want. And once it's done its job of bringing attention to this wound, this unhealed wound, remember, this is all about healing, starting right here at the very beginning. Once this wound is made known to us, once it's into conscious awareness, and this language does it, it's just like relationships and all kinds of other things can do it, then our job is to allow ourselves to be with this woundedness. This is where we all make ourselves crazy, because once people or situations or language in the book or lessons in the book, because that's what they're for too, is to bring stuff up, once it brings it up, then most of us are habituated to running to our addictions and distractions because we do not want to feel our woundedness. I'm sure that you all can relate to that. And partly we don't want to because it's painful. Partly we've learned that there's something the matter with them. I'm an adult, and mostly we live our lives trying to escape from the woundedness. And all you have to look, the only place you have to look is just like any place you are, and you find that we are addicted and distracted by virtually everything. So here we are at the place where there's almost no place else to turn and no place else to run to. And all of us who have come to A Course in Miracles, whether you realize it or not, have volunteered to say, okay, I'm going to stop running. So you didn't know what you signed up for. None of us do. But when we come to this place where woundedness starts to appear, then instead of making up a story about it's the other person, it's the other thing, woundedness comes from our own unhealed fear and guilt. And now that it's in our awareness, it's time to allow it to be healed. Now, I like to think about this as the kind of a long-term and a short-term what we do about this, because all through the course, it's going to bring up stuff. That's what it's for. That's why people have so much trouble with the lesson. They say, well, I'm just not going to do these lessons because they're uncomfortable to do. It's like, well, that's the point. They're supposed to be uncomfortable to do because they're trying to, it's trying to heal. And what it's trying to heal is the pain that comes from guilt. And because we've mostly got that shoved down into our unconscious where we can't do anything about it, along come people, places, things, books, lessons, and so on that you might say reach into your unconsciousness, bring it up and sort of hang it in front of your face where you can't miss it. Here is the point where you do not want to run to your distractions. Here we've got emergency work to do. And the emergency work is to realize, okay, this woundedness does not mean anything about me. This isn't pointing to anything that's true about me. This happens to be and that is caused by my lack of safety, my lack of peace, my lack of feeling beautiful and comfortable about myself. Remember, the goal of A Course in Miracles is our peace of mind. You cannot be peaceful and unsafe at the same time. So the things that bring us into an awareness of being unsafe is exactly where we do our work. So here's what wants to be done that almost nobody does. Just is astounding how we don't do this simple thing. And that is when the woundedness or the pain or the distress, whatever it might be, it could be grief, it can be anger, it can be just unsettled, you don't even know what it's about, allow it to be. Allow yourself to fully feel what you're feeling without commentary, without judgment, and particularly without thought, like, where did this come from? Whose fault is this? When is it going away? Why is this happening to me? In other words, your mind is not only helpful, it's a great deterrent at this point. And if you will just allow it to be without any thought about it, it will dissipate. You put your undivided, kind-hearted, welcoming attention on it. Remember, attention is key. So when you have a kind response to your own woundedness, the healing begins right away. And once the emotional state is settled, in other words, you kind of turn off the stress response, then you can, that's the short term what must be done. The long term is, okay, now I have to look at some of the things that I still believe. I still assume are true. I still take them for granted, although I don't ask who granted it in the first place. There are always going to be ideas about that are judgmental about what's the matter with me, what's the matter with somebody else. That's what's causing the pain, that lack of love. And the only way that we can move forward is instead of hiding or distracting or running from this signal, if you will, that we're believing something that's not true, then we can't get anywhere. And so if we could begin to see our distress as a signal, all it is a signal that says you believe something about yourself that's not true. And heaven knows we all grow up believing all kinds of things about ourselves that aren't true. You know, just no doubt about that whatsoever. So that's really and truly what the course is all about, is to help us see that we're actually safe. We're actually loved, because when you feel safe and loved, your peace returns. And once your peace returns, then the sky's the limit. Then one marvelous thing after the other can occur and be our experience once peace is here. That's why it talks about it over and over and over and over again. So let's take a look at a little bit more this idea of the mirror, which will, as I say, always be my very favorite example of all time. Well, at least until the next one comes along. And that is, the world is our mirror. It does not have dominion over us. We have dominion over it. So what I want you to do is imagine standing in front of a mirror, and you have on your green shirt, and you look in the mirror, and of course that's what you see, you with the green shirt, and you look and declare, I hate this green shirt looking back at me. Now, nobody in their right mind believes that there's any possibility that that green shirt in the mirror is going to go away until you put on a green shirt. You can scream, you can threaten, you can cry, you can do all kinds of things, and that green shirt's just going to stand there and look back at you. And you always know for sure, when you stand in front of a mirror, that exactly what you've got on is what's going to be reflected in the mirror. It never occurs to you to sneak up on a mirror not knowing what's going to be there. Like, is it going to have yesterday's clothes? Is it going to have tomorrow's clothes? Nope, it's a very real-time event. Our world is the same way. It is constantly reflecting back to us exactly what's going on in our mind. You might say the mental, emotional clothes that we're wearing are showing up as our world. The purpose of wrapping your head around that is, here is one of the many 180-degree switches, so to speak, that we're asked to make. That instead of, I'm a small little separate person in a great big giant world that is unpredictable, uncontrollable, I don't know anything about it, and probably I'm not safe. What an awful situation, and that's what every one of us have believed. Most of us start out believing that. We have to now, with the Course taking us by the hand, move to the radically opposite situation. That I'm the one who decides, because I'm the one who decides what I will pay attention to. Attention is key. The things that capture my attention, that I think are important, that I think I really have to give the focus to, whatever those things are that are important to us, they are important to us because they're going to keep us safe. And unfortunately, therefore, many of the things we pay attention to end up creating a world for us, and let's not use the word create, we'll use make, mirroring a world for us that we don't like. So what we have to do, and what it tries very hard to get us to connect, is unfortunate circumstances in our world, because we all are living with our own individually created world. The things in our world are like a diagnostic. People sometimes have MRIs, and an MRI shows you what's on the inside of your body. Your world that you live in on a daily basis is like a great big diagnostic that's showing you beyond the shadow of a doubt what's going on in your mind. And once you see that, you go, well, this does make sense, that as I change my mind, things will respond. And they respond immediately. They don't respond 5 years from now. Just like if you stand in front of a mirror, you don't expect the image to show up tomorrow morning. It's going to show up right away. And our world keeps doing that. It keeps showing up to let us know, And there's really a very kind and healing motivation for this. It just keeps saying, this is what you believe. Do you want to change your mind? And sometimes you may not want to change your mind, but in the big picture, hopefully, where there appears to be lack, where there appears to be unfortunate circumstances of whatever kind, they're not there because we're being punished. They're there because we have not understood the process. We've kind of been walking around with a sack over our heads, and we crash and bang into things because we can't see what's going on. I hope that you will, if you haven't revisited those first lessons, go back, not necessarily to do them as lessons, but go back and read those first lessons as a text, in addition to whatever else you're doing, and see how strongly it's trying to emphasize the fact that the world we live in and the things we are thinking and paying attention to are so exactly the same. And the purpose of this is to begin to replace power back where it belongs, which is with us. You see, we have not stopped being creators. We're just doing a little miscreating. But there's no way you can say, listen here, world, would you please stop reflecting back to me what I'm thinking? Like, give me a break. It's like it doesn't do that. It never stops reflecting back to us what's going on with us. So we might as well learn from this. And where there are things that we think are unfortunate or that we don't like, or we think people are being mean to us, or I don't have what I need, then what one wants to do is go, okay, then what I must do is to begin to look at all of these foundational beliefs that I picked up when I was little and I never examined them. You know, Socrates said the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, I don't know what he was talking about, but I've decided that that's what he was talking about because it's so true that until we look inward and say, what do I really believe? Why do I respond the way I responded? I remember when my children were, one was still a baby in arms and the other one was a toddler. And I thought, I don't understand and I can't stand my responses. I always knew how to deal with adults, but it's like, what does one do with these little people who are not rational? So in any event, I remember sitting at my kitchen table. Now, my kids are 44 and 46, so this was a long time ago, sitting at my kitchen table. And I said, I am going to spend the rest of my life and every cent I own, if necessary, to get to the bottom of why I respond the way I do. Why does anybody respond the way they respond? And that's what I've been doing ever since. In other words, I never tire of this. And I just keep learning more and more and more. And I just love passing it on. Because I'll tell you what, when I started out a long time ago, if somebody had handed me this information, I would have been so thankful to be able to see the big picture of what's going on. So anyway, the purpose of this material is to have us replace our sense of smallness and the pain that sense of smallness and being unlovable and unloving and so on, that package, the idea and the pain it creates is all to come up to dirt than anything I know of. Now, is this fun? No, not when you're in the midst of what it brings up. But wow, I would not give up one single major, you might say, painful learning experience for anything in the world. Because on the other side of it, what happens is that consciousness expansion. You hear the word, but this is like literally what happens. When we finally discover something that we've believed about ourselves, that we're unworthy or undeserving. And you can see how that's played out in your life and you go, this is nuts. This is absolutely not true. You just have a real heart-to-heart talk with yourself. And sometimes, and I've done this, I can tell you it's true, in 10 minutes, once you realize how you have labored under this misinformation about yourself and you think, this is really crazy. I don't have to listen to this anymore. Ego mind, if you want to rattle on about this, go stand over in the corner of my mind someplace and do whatever you want to do. I will not be listening. I'm going to make a better choice for myself, and you don't get to have a vote. And things can shift so quickly. Once the course continues to do its great job, which is to keep us moving toward being aware of pain and the ideas that we believed that's causing it in the first place. So I know people have written to me and they'll say, it's so hard to do these lessons. Well, the lessons aren't hard, but sometimes what it brings up is hard indeed to have to look at because we haven't allowed ourselves to look at it up to this point. But the purpose is to get you in touch with how you're hurting yourself so you can stop. Boy, do I hope that makes sense, because its purpose is, again, in this 180-degree switch from the false notions about ourselves to what's really true, the fact that we're not a little something in a great big world that doesn't care about us, but we're the ones with the power. We're the ones with the glory. We're the ones with all the assets. Now, to help that make sense to you, I'm going to make a statement. I'm going to say, I am going to the grocery store. Okay, everybody knows what we're talking about when I say I. We're talking about the body-mind construct that's going to get in the car or get on the bicycle or something and go get groceries. No confusion about that. Okay, what if I make another statement that says, I'm noticing that I'm getting too much junk food at the grocery store. There are two I's in that sentence, and they aren't the same I. Who is it that's doing the noticing? We're real clear about the second I in the sentence. If I say, I'm noticing that I'm doing whatever I'm doing at the grocery store, we're clear that we're talking about the body mind is the second one, but the first one is an observer. The first one is awareness. The first one is watching what's going on, and all disciplines that are going to try to help us change our minds, this 180 degrees, ultimately will be helping us shift our sense of identity from the ego, body, mind, emotional state thing, kind of back up to this large, clear, empty, boundless, infinite, right here, right now, awareness. I want all of you right now to just try this and see what happens. I want you to close your eyes, wherever you are, and ask yourself, on present evidence, with your eyes closed, and you're just sitting wherever you're sitting, can you know from immediate direct experience how tall you are, or where the edges of you are, or what color you are, or what political affiliation you might have, or what age you are, etc., etc.? As you're just being aware, you'll notice all of those things are ideas. There's really nothing there You can be aware of many things, but you're not the many things. You are the awareness. You are this boundless space that can watch and observe and take in everything. And this awareness never hurts. This awareness is where peace is. It's like this awareness is what love is built into. It can be aware of everything that goes on in the world. It can be aware of pain, but it itself isn't in pain. There's a huge distinction. And one of the first things that we get to do is, okay, always when something is going on, what you want to do is when it's up, the upset that the Course is going to help us get in touch with so it can be healed finally once and for all, is watch it, notice it. The awareness of us is very happy to notice anything. Notice with kindness. Notice with gentleness. Notice with no need to be doing anything about anything. You're just noticing. And this sense of consciousness will grow and grow and grow as you allow these lessons to work on you. Because this is about practicing the lessons. Like when your day unfolds, as something occurs that is surprising to you or disappointing or whatever it might be, right there and then is when you take that idea for the day and apply it to that situation. And you will just be amazed at how quickly your life can turn around. So it's very, very exciting. And we're going to continue to do our growing, and we will never stop learning, but it's not learning facts. The facts will come later. The practice comes first. Remember, joy, peace, and understanding are a package deal. So once our peace begins to return to us, so does the clarity of mind. You go, how did I ever not know this? This is so simple. But you can't see it when your mind is all fogged up with false ideas and unexperienced and unhealed emotional states. So we're just living kind of in a swamp right now. And the Course is going to take us by the hand. It's like, I know this seems difficult, but I know how to get you out of here. And boy, it does. So that's a bunch of stuff. So I think we should allow you to ask whatever questions you want to ask about anything whatsoever. You may have some specific questions or a specific something going on in your life. Just anything you want to ask about anything is fine with me. Okay, so now what do I do? Are you going to write me a question, or do I turn off my mic or what? I kind of forget. Anybody there? Nope. Regina, are you here? Okie doke. So, okay, anybody have a question? Okay, there's nobody at the wait list. No questions. All right, well, shall I tell you a couple more things then? Nobody's got a question. Okay, now, all right, then one of the things, okay, thank you. One of the things that it also talks about in great detail is the fact that giving and receiving are the same. And it admonishes us, it encourages us, it does everything possible to try to get us to recognize that what we give, we receive. And we give it and receive it immediately, just like the mirror thing. It's like nobody's confused about the immediacy of an image that shows up in a mirror. And we need to be equally aware that our giving and receiving is also an immediate thing. Because if I feel afraid, and if I'm mad at people, and I'm basically judgmental and kind of being sour about things, the world that you live in, that you will selectively see, is going to be a very unpleasant place. Selective perception. It talks very much about perception. And here's why. I think I said this before. I don't remember, but I'll say it again because one needs to hear these things a million times. And that is, the brain is a pattern-seeking organ. So if we've got somebody whose mind is filled with nobody loves me, I'm no good, and life will never work out kind of thoughts, that's what they will selectively see. In other words, if somebody is insulting to them, boy, they'll pick that up in a heartbeat, because that kind of input, we have to use language that makes sense to us, we'll call it input. It's really output, but we're going to call it input. It's like there's a match. It's like I'm expecting to be hurt. And so, boy, somebody insults us and we're right on top of that. And it's like, see, I'm such a victim, and so on and so forth. That very same person could have somebody be very kind to them, be very nice to them, smile at them, and they will literally not see it. Literally. The reason why is that they don't have, you might say, a place. We'll just pretend like there's little places in your mind, like a little hook to hang things on. I don't have a little hook that says people are kind and nice to me and I'm lovable and I have every right to be treated kindly. That idea does not exist in the mind. So if somebody's nice to me, you might say that being nice comes in, it's like, well, there's no match here. And it literally falls through the perceptual cracks. And so we're convinced that our picture of the world is accurate. Well, it's not that it's the collective world is accurate. Your own particular world will be accurate, but it's not a commentary about anybody else's experience except your own. So it just tells us, okay, if I'm seeing in the world something that's reflecting back to me that's unpleasant, here's where we want to jump right on this idea that it talks about throughout, that what I give and what I receive are the same thing. And the way this giving-receiving loop looks is when I am convinced that I'm an undeserving person, then remember, my DNA is listening and responding. The quantum field is listening and responding. And if I just keep this idea, even though it may be very private, we think in my mind that I'm unworthy and undeserving and nobody loves me, then the creative let's just use some simple language. Let's just say our three-dimensional world apparatus springs right into action to make us right. It's kind of the genie jumps out of the bottle and it's like, your wish is my command. The world is showing up as we're commanding it to show up, through the focus of our attention. And if I'm chronically thinking about what's the matter with me or someone else, it doesn't ask us. It doesn't say, could we sit down here for you? Is this really what you want? All it says is, what you're paying attention to is a prayer. If you've read the little booklet that comes at the end of the course, or came after the course, that's called The Song of Prayer. It's a beautiful little booklet. And in there, it says, we pray without ceasing. So this business about can you pray in school or not is just ridiculous. We pray all the time because we're always paying attention to something and we're paying attention to what's important to us. or we're paying attention to something that we presume is a foundational absolute truth about us. And there's just no gap between what we say is so. This is a command to the universe on our part, and it unquestioningly shows up as our world. So in terms of reversing this, in other words, we are in a closed loop that we now have to break open. We need a crack in our feedback loop, because now I just get to be right all the time. I'm always right all the time because my world is showing up as I command it to show up. So prayer, I see somebody's question or comment. Prayer is what I'm paying attention to in my awareness. I'm always aware, but it's what I'm choosing to be aware of. In other words, what am I going to allow to be the focus of my awareness? So if we're constantly thinking about how can I make people like me because they don't now, then what it hears is it doesn't hear the first part of the what can I do about this. It hears the underlying statement, people don't like me. And absolutely, people will be unkind and they'll be attacking and there'll be all kinds of other things because this is a terribly unkind thing to keep focusing on because it's not true, and we are attacking ourselves when we think this way. So that other people will appear to attack us as an exact mirror, as an exact image and degree to which we are attacking ourselves. And the attack out there will not stop, no matter how far you run, until you stop attacking yourself internally. So you see, that's what the healing is all about. It's healing all these terrible things we believe about ourselves that are so unspeakably untrue. The fact is that it wants us to keep coming back to is you haven't left home, you haven't stopped being the divinity, literally, that you are. You've gone to sleep and you've made yourself crazy. Remember in the early part of the text where it quotes the Bible and it says, and Adam fell into a deep sleep, and nowhere does it say he ever woke up. And that's our circumstance. We're in the process of desperately needing to wake up, because to stay asleep and to stay in this space where we are miscreating through our lack of understanding of our power and the consequences of our power. So if you can imagine a matrix, in other words, however you think of a matrix that's made up of all of our beliefs and notions and unexamined ideas about things and presumptions and what on, and the power, the infinite power that we are, you might say, is funneled through this matrix of beliefs and notions and ideas and crazy stuff that we've never looked at, and it gives us a distorted world, a world that the Course tells us is fear-driven, it's guilt-driven, someplace in one of the latter chapters that says, you know, there's one last question you have to ask yourself. How do you like this world that you've created of murder and attack, where you have to kind of thread your way carefully, hoping that death will stay away for a little while? It's like, how do you like that world you've created for yourself? It's very in your face. If you're a new student, the Course goes up at kind of an, you might say, a more gentle slope, you know, gradually luring you in until it gets to about chapter 15. And then it spikes. It starts to go more relentlessly up. The language becomes more extreme. It's more in your face. It makes very, very clear, unequivocal statements about the insanity that we've created for ourselves and our ability to turn it all around when we're willing to change our minds about ourselves. And it says, okay, well, one way to do this, and we'll talk about this some more, is, all right, giving and receiving are the same. What I want for someone else, I will experience in myself. And it says, anything that you're lacking, like if you feel unloved, if you feel uncared for, it says, that doesn't say you are it doesn't say you're not loved and not cared for. It says you are, but you cannot be aware of it. You've made yourself unaware of your own basic nature. We've just gone to sleep. But it never, ever means that our beautiful, loving, and all the adjectives that you can think of about that, which don't even touch the truth of us, they're right here. They're right with us. They're right where our breath is, that we have made ourselves crazy by focusing on these ideas that are so not true. And so listen to what it's trying to do, is to take us by the hand and say, come on, we're going to look at these things that you believe so you can change your mind, and I'm going to show you how to change your mind. One of the first things it's going to do is to say, okay, if you want to feel safe, which is the basic fundamental thing that any living creature wants to be, is safe, in your interactions with people, make it your highest priority that when they're with you, they're going to be safe. In other words, so that the safety of whomever you find yourself with, it's in your mind. You want to treat them. You want to talk to them. You want your energy outreach to be one of wanting them to feel safe. You can presume that virtually anybody you run into at some level doesn't feel safe. And the more you want that for them, not just sort of technically, but the way you treat them, the way you look at them, the way you interact with them, the way you're present with them, to that very same degree, your own sense of safety will increase. The giving and receiving thing is so important because you get instant feedback. So I highly encourage you to just experiment this. Try it. Think, how do I want to feel? See, this isn't just some sort of a moral thing. You know, the golden rule is so misunderstood. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It seems like I just wrote an article recently about that. Sounds like, well, doing this would be a good idea, or doing this is the moral and right thing to do. No, it's much deeper than that. It's much more profound than that. It's like, whatever you do to someone else, how you think about them, how you treat them, is precisely and exactly, whether you like it or not, what your experience will be. So what you give to someone else, when you give them your undivided, caring attention, you will feel that way. You will be able to just practice this and prove to yourself not only your own power to change your life experience, but you can see it at work. You can see it, I don't mean at your work, I mean you can see it at work in your life. So you don't have to take anybody's word for it. One of the things I've said for all my decades of teaching this material is, don't believe what I say. If it's true, every single time you practice it, you will find out for yourself that it's true, because it is. So you should always take what someone else says. If it's a law, it's a law that's going to work all the time under all circumstances. And the giving and receiving law is absolutely one where you will get feedback right away. So we have 3 or 4 minutes left. Surely someone must have a question. Anybody? Nope. Have you all been struck dumb or something. By dumb, I don't mean stupid. I mean like I can't speak. I'd be happy to answer anything you find of interest. Okay, how about more on prayer? Okay, what more would you like to know about that? Prayer is, as I mentioned, in the and the Song of Prayer is such a beautiful thing. If you haven't read it, I would highly recommend it. Mostly prayer, it says in the beginning, we act like the body. It talks about the rungs on the ladder of prayer, and the first one is, I want something like, please God, whatever God means to you, I could you give me a better job or whatever. And it's like the problem with asking to get something like that is the underlying premise of that prayer is, I don't have this now. Oh dear, that doesn't work, because anytime I think I need to have this, or I want this, or please give this to me, that prayer is making a statement, I don't have this now. And that's what the creative principle is going to listen to. It's like I didn't know it, but I was praying the prayer, I don't have this now, and it says, okay, we'll serve you up not having what you need. So in any event, a prayer is, it's what I'm paying attention to, and we're very mindless about what we pay attention to. And one of the things that it's going to ask us is, notice what you're doing. Notice what you're thinking. It says this is a course in mind training. And it also says someplace, you allow your mind to just wander all over the place. Well, people have been telling us that for at least 5,000 years. So this is a restatement of that very ancient wisdom. And let's see, what does somebody write? Any mind reads about others are your thought. Yeah. It's like we will speak in detail next time about how relationships reveal to us, as one friend said long ago, our relationships fit us like a tailor-made Hong Kong suit, which I think is hilarious. It's like, but it's so exactly right. So we can sure see more clearly than anywhere what I believe about myself, what I'm ordering up for myself, what I'm praying for in terms of my life through my close relationships. So we sure will talk about that next time. And if somebody has 1 minute's worth of a question, I'd love for you to quickly ask. I'll talk fast. Anybody? No? Okay, well, thank you ever so kindly for being here, and I'll look forward to joining you next Sunday, Easter Sunday. I'm sure we'll have lots to say about that and for all of us. Thank you. Bye.